All right, so I want to start this morning with a story. A few years ago, Michael and I were very, very lucky because we decided to take our 10-year wedding anniversary trip 1 year early in the summer of 2019, which means we did not have a once-in-a-lifetime international trip planned for June of 2020. Isn't that lucky? So we spent a week on the Irish coast in this little place called the Dingle Peninsula, which is the westernmost tip of the country. And the highlight of the trip for me was hiking Mount Brandon, which we learned is actually one of the tallest peaks in Ireland, and it's also quite famous. Now, what's interesting about Mount Brandon is that it's named after the early Christian saint Brendan the Navigator. And so this hike is not only this, you know, gorgeous experience of the Irish countryside, but it's also a really popular trek for religious pilgrims. And you'll just be walking along, and then there's an ancient Christian artifact. There's a shrine. There's a grotto and a place you can recognize the Blessed Virgin Mary. I mean, it's very unusual. It's very interesting. But when I read more about Mount Brandon, I learned that this mountain was probably associated with pilgrimage even before the arrival of Christianity in Ireland, so for a very, very long time. And historians think that this was probably because of the mountain's unique position as the highest and the westernmost point in the whole area, meaning that's the place where the sun stays visible the longest as it begins to sink below the horizon. And in an otherwise pretty dark and rainy country, that was a big deal, right? You could see everything better from up there and for longer. I think for quite similar reasons, actually, Jesus' ancestors, the ancient Near Eastern peoples, also had a kind of religious relationship with mountains. So think about it. In their view of the universe, heaven is up here, the earth is down there, and there's this separation between the two realms. So in their view, mountains were literally closer to heaven and thus closer to the gods. This is why in the Old Testament you hear about all these different people groups offering sacrifices, building altars, building temples on what was called the high places. And in the Old Testament, when God called Israel to himself, he instructed them to tear down the high places that were made to other gods and to worship him there instead. The result is that there is a lot of action that happens on mountaintops in the biblical story. Just to list a few examples, Noah and his family are delivered from the flood on Mount Ararat. Abraham offers Isaac on Mount Moriah. Moses receives the law on Mount Sinai. Elijah calls down fire from heaven on Mount Carmel. Solomon builds the temple on Mount Zion. You get the picture. Mountains are kind of a big deal. We can appreciate this as mountain people, right? And today's gospel story belongs to that same narrative, the story of Israel that has seen God's glory on the mountain. Our story is about Jesus climbing to a high place with his disciples, and then they see him transfigured, physically transformed. They see his face shine like the sun, and his clothes are dazzling white, whiter than anyone on earth could bleach them, the story says. They see a strange cloud, and they hear an audible voice from heaven. This is the language of theophany, of a visible, tangible encounter with God. So it makes sense that we tell this story during Epiphany, doesn't it? Because this is the season in the church calendar when we especially reflect on the revelation of God's glory. God reveals himself to his people, to us, to all people, so that we can know and worship him as he truly is. But next week is the start of Lent, which has a very different tone, a very different feel. We're about to enter a season in the church focused on penitence, on self-reflection, self-examination, fasting, almsgiving. We're going to be talking about this more in the coming weeks, but we're about to enter a season in the church where we journey with Jesus to the cross. And the transfiguration is the hinge that links these two seasons. It helps us to understand how Epiphany is connected to Lent. So that's what I want to reflect on today. How does this glimpse of God's glory How exactly does it make sense of what's coming, both in the church calendar, but also in our lives? How does it make better sense of what's coming for us, even in 2024? How is the Transfiguration not just another interesting Bible story, but something that matters in our lives today? So that's where we're headed. And the story that Owen read for us in Mark chapter 9 actually begins in the previous chapter with a question. Jesus asks Peter, he says, "Who do the crowd say that I am?" And Peter responds, "Well, some say Elijah or one of the prophets of old that has risen." In other words, as Jesus' ministry is taking off, people are beginning to realize that he's special, but they're not sure just how special he is. Is he a prophet? Maybe a really important prophet? Maybe he's Elijah. So on the mountain, the transfigured Jesus appears beside Elijah, which clears up once and for all the questions of Jesus' identity. He is not just one of the prophets of old. Now, he also appears beside Moses, who represents the law of God. And Moses prophesied at the end of his ministry that God would one day raise up a new prophet, the supreme prophet. And Moses said in Deuteronomy 18, "It is to him you shall listen." And in case we don't catch this connection, because we're not all Jewish readers, right? We may miss this, but Mark makes it explicit in verse 7. The voice comes from the cloud saying, "This is my beloved son. Listen to him." It is to him you shall listen. He's the one you've been waiting for. Moses and Elijah, they represent all of Israel's teaching, the law and the prophets. And here they both defer to Jesus. So the import for good Jews would be, you want to be a good Jew? Listen to Jesus. For us, it's similar. You want to be a good person? Listen to Jesus. Do you want to be spiritually enlightened, socially conscious, a seeker of truth? Listen to Jesus. He is the one who can show you the way. In other words, Jesus is not just one good teacher among many. He's not just offering us advice that we can then decide how to appropriate in accordance with our own conscience. Jesus is the teacher. He speaks the definitive word of God for all people and all times. This is what Christians believe. But we believe even more than that about Jesus, right? We believe he's not just a good teacher or even the best teacher. We believe that Jesus is God. God made flesh. This is a mystery, and we don't pretend to understand it. But Moses and Elijah help us to grasp this mystery, to experience it by their presence on the mountain in this way. You might remember that these two men had their own encounters with God on a mountain, but neither one of them was able to fully see God's face. So we just heard one of these stories this morning. Elijah spoke to God on Mount Horeb. But what did he do once he became aware of God's presence? He covered his face with a cloak. And on Mount Sinai, Moses prayed to God. He said, "Lord, show me your glory." But then what did he have to do as God passed before him? He had to hide behind a rock when God passed before him. So neither of these men was able to see God fully. But here, Moses' prayer is finally fully answered as he stands in the presence of Jesus. So it's appropriate that we read this story at the end of Epiphany because, y'all, it is the literal mountaintop experience of the whole season, right? In the cloud, in the voice, in this dazzling appearance of Jesus, God manifests his glory to the living and the dead. God is finally here among us in the flesh. Now, maybe you're listening and you're thinking, well, okay, it's fair that Moses and Elijah got to be there. They got to see God in this special way. You know, they were the greatest of the prophets, God's special, his chosen servants. But here's the thing. Peter, James, and John were there too, and they weren't anybody special, at least not yet. In fact, Mark leaves out this detail, but in Luke's story, we learn that the disciples were actually asleep when all of this started. They weren't looking for God. They weren't offering a sacrifice. They weren't even praying. They were supposed to be praying. Jesus had asked them to pray with him, but apparently they couldn't even stay awake long enough to do that. Does anybody here relate? Okay. Do you ever feel like you want to be more spiritual, like you want to be more disciplined in seeking God, but you're just too sleepy? You're too distracted. Your spirit might be willing, but your flesh is weak. I relate to this. God is generous in his self-disclosure. All this stuff about the sleepy disciples and God coming to them anyway, it helps us understand the emphasis on this in this story of God revealing himself. The emphasis is not on the disciples' worthiness or their failure. The emphasis in the story is on God's generosity. God graciously bestows upon them and upon us the manifestation of his glory. Jesus gives himself to us, friends, as a gift. We don't earn him. We don't make him. We definitely do not deserve him. We receive him, even if that means he has to wake us up. I wonder if you and I this morning might have the courage to just ask God, whether it's for the first time or maybe for the 1,000th time, would we have the courage to ask him, Lord, show me your glory? And then to believe that his desire is to answer that prayer. It's not about our deserving. It's about his generosity. This is what he's doing with us day after day after day. Now, I want to turn back to the story and reflect on what this generosity then produces in the lives of his disciples. So he reveals himself to them, undeserving though they may be, but his revelation is not just for, recreational purposes, right? God doesn't reveal himself so that we can say, wow, we had this great time with God. We had this really cool mystical experience. A genuine encounter with God in the Bible and always also produces the fruit of obedience. Think about this. The only words the disciples hear in this whole experience on the mountain, the punchline of the whole story is verse 7. The voice from the cloud comes from heaven and says, this is my son. Listen to him. Listen to him. Because things won't always feel as clear as they do right now. Listen to him because life on the other side of this experience might be pretty bewildering. As the story unfolds, we know this is exactly what happens. That in the weeks and years ahead, Jesus was going to ask his disciples to do some pretty hard things. He was going to lead them down a path that would make no sense to them. It's striking to me that in all three synoptics, all three accounts of this story in the Gospels, the transfiguration is followed immediately by Jesus climbing down the mountain to cast out a demon. He goes from the heights of glory into the depths of human brokenness and despair. Now, admittedly, casting out a demon is pretty cool. And the disciples, they were on board with that. But from there, Jesus would go lower still in ways the disciples did not approve of and did not understand. He would go on to hand himself over to suffering and death. Now we begin to anticipate the downward direction of Lent. Right? Jesus, who is revealed on the mountain as God's beloved son, then leaves his position of privilege and descends to the very lowest place where he must suffer many things and be rejected and killed. In doing this, Jesus flips the religious script of his day. His people had a long history of climbing mountains to try to get closer to God. They expected to see him on the high places. But here, Jesus shows us that God is actually in the business of going low. And he calls us to follow him. Just before the transfiguration, Jesus said this outright to his disciples. This is Mark 8:34. He said, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. This is what we will be practicing for the next 40 days as we follow Jesus down the mountain and through the wilderness. This is Lent. It's apprenticing Jesus in the way of the cross, which is a ministry of descent, of going low. And if we're honest, this is not the fun part of our faith, is it? It's not fun, but it is essential. Because the same God who generously reveals his glory on the mountain also calls us to conform to his suffering and death. The Christian story is inclusive of both. So we must learn how to embrace both. Just last month, I encountered a very personal example of this. Some of you here know that I lost my dad to cancer when I was 14. He actually died 22 years ago yesterday, on February 10th. And just last month, I was able to read his prayer journal for the first time. And it started out really optimistic. You know, he was 38 when he was diagnosed. We all were praying for healing, thought he had a decent chance. He was a pretty healthy guy. But over time, it became increasingly clear that healing would not be how his story ended. And as this realization dawned on him, he started referring to his cancer journey as his journey to Jerusalem. His journey, in a sense, to the cross, to his death. In other words, in his prayer life, he began looking to Jesus not only for an example of how to live, but also of how to die. I'd like to read one of his prayers to you now. He wrote, "Jesus made it clear that he came to please the Father, not himself. He set his face out for Jerusalem, for the cross. Lord, this is my determination also. Show me the way to Jerusalem that I may do your will, whatever that will is. Christ is my perfect example in all things. I pray as he did, if it's possible, take this cup from me. Yet not my will, but thine be done." What so struck me as I read these prayers of my dad is how his closeness with God strengthened him not only to ask for healing, but also to follow him faithfully no matter what, to trust him even when his prayers weren't being answered the way he hoped, even when he was losing his life. And I think, brothers and sisters, the transfiguration actually calls us to something very similar. It asks us to decide whether we are compelled enough by what we see in Jesus to then follow him down the mountain to whatever unknown or even unwanted futures wait for us. This isn't going to look like a cancer diagnosis in all of our lives, or maybe even a huge crisis of any kind, but we are all called to carry our own cross in 1,000 different ways every day of our lives. In other words, if we want to follow Jesus, we will have to journey to Jerusalem one way or another. And friends, if that sounds daunting to you, join the club. We are all in this together. But here's the thing. If the story is true, if Jesus really is the Son of Man as he revealed himself to be all those years ago, then we don't need to be afraid to do his will, no matter how hard or even unfair it may seem in the short term. We don't need to be afraid to follow him. Here's why. This is my last point. One last way the transfiguration can help us even now as we follow Jesus into hard places. It comes from verse 9, so I'll read that to you again. As they were coming down the mountain, he charged them to tell no one what they had seen until the Son of Man had risen from the dead. As Jesus began his journey to Jerusalem, his descent to suffering and death, he hinted that Jerusalem would not be his final destination or ours. He told his disciples up front that the Son of Man would rise again. In other words, Jesus' glory on the mountain, it's not just a picture of what was true in that moment. It was also a prophecy and a promise of what's to come. Even more than the resurrected Christ, friends, the transfigured Christ gives us a glimpse of the end of the whole story, when the Son of Man will come again in power. This phrase, the Son of Man, it's a mysterious phrase. that comes mostly from the Old Testament, so it loomed large in Jewish imagination. And it's the title that Jesus used for himself more than any other title in the Gospels. So let me read to you what the Old Testament says about the Son of Man. This is from Daniel 7. You'll see some hints from our passage. "I saw one like a son of man coming with the clouds of heaven. His clothing was white as snow, and his hair was as white as wool. And to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom shall not be destroyed." What Peter, James, and John saw that day was a glimpse of the Son of Man. It was the inbreaking of a future moment when one day all God's people will stand again in his presence forever. And on that day, Paul tells us in his letter to the Romans, on that day, the sufferings of this present time won't even be worth comparing to the glory that will be revealed to us. In other words, the transfiguration is not just a memory. It's also a destination. It's our destination. It's a promise that those who journey with Jesus to Jerusalem will also one day stand with him in glory, in a kingdom that will never be destroyed. This is what gives us the strength to carry our crosses in the meantime, because we know our suffering won't have the final word. We will be raised to stand with Jesus again. And this is what Peter urges us to pay attention to in the present moment. In his letter to the church today, we heard it this morning. He said, "Pay attention to this as to a lamp shining in a dark place, until the day dawns and the morning star rises in your hearts." I hope that encourages you. I hope it orients you if you are struggling on the journey to Jerusalem. If you're following Jesus and it's bewildering and it's confusing and it's painful, and maybe you're wondering if you've made a mistake. You haven't. Hold on to the light that is shining right now in this dark place, until the day dawns, because it will. The day will dawn. But wherever you are in this story, whether you're maybe still basking in glory on the mountain, maybe you're in a great place with God, or maybe you're sweating it out in the ministry of descent, or maybe as you're listening to all this, you're not even sure that Jesus can be trusted at all. Wherever you are in the story, the invitation is the same for all of us. And this is where I'll close. The voice from the cloud says, "This is my beloved son. Listen to him."